Right now, Jolly Ranchers is hair gel, colored pencils is eyeshadow, book covers used as blush. These are all beauty hacks used by female inmates, past and present. While critics may question why makeup is necessary for an inmate while serving time, our next guest says beauty products can help inmates keep a sense of their identities and their humanity while behind bars. Marilyn Komar is a writer who covers fashion and beauty history, feminism, style, and travel. Her piece, Why Makeup Matters to Women in Prison, appeared on racked.com. Marilyn, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I think if people think about the experience of women in prison, makeup might not be high on the list. Why is it so important, though?
So I found the interesting thing about researching this piece is that it really connects back to women's history. So usually, like in modern times, when we think of makeup, we think of women putting it on to be more beautiful, but not necessarily for themselves, but for the public. So when you hear of women in prison putting on makeup, it's a little bit confusing to some because they think of they're indoors, they don't have visitors, you know, they are locked up with other women, so why should they be beautiful? But the reason that it links back is because it connects back to choice and to autonomy.
So the idea is that makeup for women in prison and maybe women not in prison too isn't necessarily just for other people to look at. It's a self-expression, an identity?
Right, yeah. And the really, the way that it connects back to prison is that women in prison, the important thing to remember is that women in the penitentiary have been abused and traumatized for most of their lives. So a lot of the time when they use makeup, they use it as a way to rebuild themselves and to get back their sense of self-worth.
And you trace some of the history of what women in prisons over the years have done, given that they don't have access to makeup in prison. Can you talk about some of the history behind what women in prison have done to make up for that lack of makeup?
Yeah, so in 1908, one woman created blush by pulling out the red stitching from her government-issued nightgown, and then she soaked the threads in water and then dabbed that stain onto her cheeks. So she basically made blush by pulling out these red strings from her nightdress.
And you write that stymied the prison guards. They couldn't figure out where she was getting blush.
Yeah, so the warden started losing his mind because during that time, Russian ballet was really popular, and like this one inmate, she kept having like these ballerina-like cheeks, like she would have like these red circles on her cheeks, and he couldn't figure out how she got this contraband inside. So it took them a couple of weeks where the guards had to kind of keep an eye on her and figure out how she was doing it, and they found out that very patiently, very slowly, she would be picking out these threads and then slowly soaking them water and then using it as a stain for rouge.
And you write about other creative solutions over the years. What other kinds of things have we seen?
So in that same prison, this was a prison in Milan, women also, they used to make face powder by licking the walls of their cells, and then they would chew the lime dust to make white paste, and they would dab that onto their faces as face powder. Or there was another woman who would regularly break the prison rules so she could be sent down to confinement, where she stole wire from a window grate to make a corset. And the only way they found out she had that corset was that one day she put it on too tightly and she passed out in the chapel. And they had to, like, take off her dress, and they were like, oh, what is this? But then in 1946 in Ottawa, for example, incarcerated women picked out prison books in red binding, and they soaked the covers to use the red stain as blush or lipstick. Or then in the 1970s in Bedford Hills, women would dip a finger into toothpaste, and they would rub it into colored picture in a magazine and use the pigment as eyeshadow.
And Marilyn,
but there was like...
Oop, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, sorry.
Generally now, do prisons allow women to have access to some or all forms of beauty care products?
They do. So the majority of prison on the commissary list, they allow from 3 to 5 different makeup items, and they would span from just normal everyday things. So like lip gloss, a very limited foundation, eyeshadow, stuff like that. But women would use fake up hacks, so essentially DIY hacks, to make up for the things that the commissary list was lacking.
And there's been pushback at times when that was made available to women. Can you talk about that?
Right. So in a lot of my research, I tried to mostly research history-related things. But when I would read the newer articles, you know, like the first fake-up hack article was featured in 2014 on the Marshall Project. And a lot of the comments on those articles would be people angry that prison is allowing inmates to have these things that are thought of as a luxury. So they were wondering, you know, these people broke the law. This isn't a vacation. They shouldn't be made to feel good about themselves, that they should be, you know, punished in this prison setting rather than given mascara wands and, you know, hairspray and stuff like that. But a lot of the times, I think what the issue is the public doesn't realize that the women that are incarcerated, they come from a very long setting of abuse and trauma. So, for example, like if you look at the statistics, to allow them to have this sense of self-care, to have this outlet of self-care, it helps to rebuild their sense of worth. And once they get out of prison, and they will get out of prison, 98% of inmates do leave the penitentiary and they do get go back into society. You know, like you want them to be more functioning and, you know, a better citizen overall.
Talking to Marilyn Komar, she wrote recently about makeup in women's prisons. And Marilyn, that last point you're making gets really to the heart of what you're looking at, what people might see as kind of a trivial thing in prisons. What do we want prisons to do to and or for the people who are in them? Can you talk about that?
Right. So as I was saying with the statistics on women, so as I said, most of them have been abused in their lifetime. So almost 90% of women in the system have experienced sexual abuse and violence, and most during their childhoods. And in a very real way, their past puts them on a direct path towards incarceration, so much so that Senator Cory Booker from New Jersey called it the survivor of sexual trauma to prison pipeline. So if you look at the breakdown, an overwhelming 86% are sexual abuse survivors. 60% that are incarcerated have experienced caregiver violence, and over 90% of women who are convicted of murdering a partner were victims of partner abuse. And then to take it further, 32% that are incarcerated right now have serious mental illnesses, and 82% are suffering drug or alcohol addiction, which oftentimes is used as self-medication in order to cope with the side effects of their past. And if you think that these statistics don't create a domino effect, you're wrong, because those with histories of abuse are 77% more likely to be arrested than women who did not suffer that kind of trauma.
And by and large, as you research this, does the prison experience of women reflect that? Does it orient itself toward treating the consequences of that abuse and the things that follow that?
So it depends from state to state. So, for example, I personally interviewed, I'm from Chicago, so I interviewed Deanne Benos, who's the founder of Women's Justice Initiative in Chicago, which works to address the lack of gender-responsive practices for women throughout the criminal justice system. And, I mean, she had a ton of cases where in Illinois, the people that work in the prison system, instead of helping to rebuild these women that have landed in prison, they further break them down. So, for example, there was one example. So when in Logan in Illinois, it was converted into a women's prison, and they herded the women together in buses from the other prison and lined them up outside. And the person that was in charge of the lines that day was telling the women, like, you women are nasty, you're a bunch of smelly whores, you're disgusting. And it's just like constant words that challenge your self-esteem. And that wasn't an isolated incident. That was just one out of a thousand. So these women that are inside the prison, they're just further torn down rather than helped to be rebuilt.
And you wrote about one example that kind of flipped this around and made beauty care an opportunity for women, a hair salon in a prison in the 1950s. The idea is, hey, we'll give women access to makeup and beauty products and maybe some job training skills for when they get out.
Right. So that's actually, so when you read articles and they actually, like in the here and now, when you read articles and they mention beauty salons in prison, like those aren't beauty salons just so, you know, women who are incarcerated can get their hair done. Those are vocational training projects. So when there is a, what that is to basically teach these women how to be hairstylists. So when they leave prison, they have that opportunity, which makes sense because, like, for example, when I mentioned in the 1950s, women who would leave that Greenwich Village prison, they would only have about 25 cents in cash to their name, which is a little over $2 in today's times. So, I mean, if you're let go out of prison that day, you don't even have enough money for transportation, for food, for lodging. So having a vocational training under your belt, that helps you to reincorporate into society a lot faster. And that's what we're doing now. So in men's prisons, they have barbershops. In women's prisons, they have hair salons. They have nail technicians. And that's all to teach them to have like a vocational practice when they leave.
We'll leave it there for now. Marilyn, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Marilyn Komar is a writer who covers fashion and beauty history. She joined us to talk about her piece, Why Makeup Matters to Women in Prison.